You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Even the most cursory look at the 150 Psalms in our Bible makes it clear that there are different categories of Psalms, like praise, wisdom, thanksgiving, and lament. Psalm 104 is a creation psalm, singing the praises of the Creator. Now, some people still hold on to the idea that David wrote all the Psalms, but these people clearly haven't actually read the Psalms. They're obviously by different authors, and like the others, we don't know who wrote this one. But some scholars suggest influences from Egyptian psalms. If you look up Hymn to Aten, allegedly written by Pharaoh Akhenaten, you'll find a very similar poem written 500 or more years before Psalm 104. But regardless of who the author was, they were gifted in Hebrew, to the point that one commentator has declared that it's worth studying Hebrew for 10 years just to be able to read Psalm 104 in the original language. You'll be relieved to know we'll be hearing it in English today and from the Message version.
Our words of wisdom are from Psalm 104, verses 10 through 24 of the Message version.
You started the springs and rivers, sent them flowing along the hills. All the wild animals now drink their fill. Wild donkeys quench their thirst.
Along the riverbanks, the birds build nests. Ravens make their voices heard. You water the mountains from your heavenly cisterns. Earth is supplied with plenty of water.
You make grass grow for the livestock, hay for the animals that plow the ground. Oh yes, God brings grain from the land, wine to make people happy, their faces glowing with health, a people well fed and hearty.
God's trees are well watered, the Lebanon cedars he planted. Birds build their nests in those trees. Look, the stork at home in the treetop.
Mountain goats climb about the cliffs. Badgers burrow among the rocks. The moon keeps track of the seasons. The sun is in charge of each day.
When it's dark and night takes over, all the forest creatures come out. The young lions roar for their prey, clamoring to God for their supper.
When the sun comes up, they vanish, lazily stretched out in their dens. Meanwhile, men and women go out to work, busy at their jobs until evening.
What a wildly wonderful world, God. You made it all with wisdom at your side, made earth overflow with your wonderful creations.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
In her Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, Annie Dillard says that when she was 6 or 7 years old, she used to take a precious penny and hide it for someone else to find. She'd always hide the penny along the same stretch of sidewalk, cradling it in the roots of a sycamore or in the hole left by a chipped-off piece of sidewalk. Then she would take a piece of chalk and, starting at either end of the block, draw huge arrows leading up to the penny from both directions. After she learned to write, she labeled the arrows, "Surprise ahead," or "Money this way." During all this arrow drawing, she was so excited thinking about the first lucky passerby who would receive this free gift from the universe. But she never lurked about. She would go straight home and not give the matter another thought. Now an adult, Dillard says she's been thinking about seeing. There are lots of things to see, she says. unwrapped gifts and free surprises. The world is fairly studded and strewn with pennies cast broadside from a generous hand. The tragic reality is most of us are too busy, too rushed, or too preoccupied to notice, even when there is a sign that announces surprise ahead. Dillard is right. We're the poorer for it. And since the world is planted in pennies, there's no excuse for our poverty of spirit. With the startling simplicity of a child, she concludes, "What you see is what you get." Except maybe there's an even better way to think of it, because what you see, what any of us sees, is filtered, edited, and curated by habit, by culture, by fear, by what we've been taught to notice and what we've been trained to ignore. So maybe an even better way of getting at today's focus is, what you get is what you see. We often think of children as the embodiment of wonder, of curiosity and attentiveness. And maybe there's a little something to that when Jesus said, we have to be like children to enter the kingdom of God, filled with wonder and awe and curiosity and attentive to details we miss. When Maddie was just 4 or 5 years old, she came to me very concerned. It was the height of football season, and I think some playoff was down to Pittsburgh and Dallas. She tugged on my shirt and asked, "Daddy, why would anyone root for the bad guys?" "What? You know, the ones who take stuff without asking." And I said, "Who?" And she said, "You know, the Steelers." Sometimes it takes a child to hear something we've never heard before. Sometimes it takes a child to help us see things we're not paying attention to. A friend told me how he thought there was something wrong with his infant daughter, under 6 months old, still struggling to try to keep her head up. He had her outside one day when she started just flopping her head back and forth. He was panicked. "Is she having a seizure? What's going on?" Then he realized she was watching the birds. The birds that, up to that point, he'd been oblivious to. Some of you know I'm a big fan of Michael Pollan's work over the years. In his psychedelics-focused book, This Is Your Mind on Plants, he recounts a conversation with child psychologist Alison Gopnik. She talks about how young children don't see the world the way adults do. Adults, she says, have what you might call spotlight attention, focused, efficient, task-oriented. We lock in on what matters. We filter out the rest. We get things done. It's practical, necessary, very grown up. But children? Children have what she calls lantern consciousness, wide open, floodlight. Everything is interesting. Everything is alive. They're not just looking at the world. They're taking it all in. Texture, color, possibility, connection. And when Pollan asks her if that sounds a bit like what people on psychedelics report experiencing, heightened awareness, sense that everything is vivid and meaningful, she doesn't flinch. She says, in essence, yeah, it's like kids are kind of high all the time. Pollan furthers the point by suggesting, just try having a tea party with a toddler. You'll see how much more they're noticing than you are. You're focused on having tea, and they're noticing, interacting with, and reacting to details far outside your spotlight. Because here's the thing. Growing up, becoming what we think of as mature is largely the process of narrowing our field of vision. We learn to focus, to categorize, to decide what's relevant and what's not. We gain clarity, yeah, but at a cost. We stop seeing a lot of what's actually in front of us. So all of a sudden, what you see is what you get becomes profoundly conditional. Because more often than not, what you get is what you've been trained to see. And every once in a while, whether through awe or grief or love or some holy disruption, our finely tuned filter gets jarred and something we were missing before comes into focus. Suddenly we're seeing something that's more real than what we'd seen before. Frederick and Marianne Brassatz have written a couple of wonderfully helpful books with a companion website, advocating for what they call spiritual literacy. Part of that literacy is recognizing the presence of the sacred in everyday experiences. One of these practices is called simply paying attention, and it's different from mindfulness, which we'll revisit another time. Paying attention helps us respond to the cues around us to move into a deeper awareness of the divine, of our true selves, of other people, and the whole of creation. Today's psalm encourages us to acknowledge the interconnectedness of nature and to be aware of the wonder of it all. Springs gush forth in the valleys, giving drink to every wild animal. Birds sing among the branches. Food is brought forth from the earth and wine to gladden the human heart. The trees of the Lord are watered abundantly. In them the birds build their nests. O Lord, how manifold are your works. In the Brothers Karamazov, one of Fyodor Dostoevsky's characters says, "Love all God's creation, both the whole and every grain of sand. Love every leaf, every ray of light. Love the animals, love the plants, love each separate thing. If you love each thing, you will perceive the mystery of God in all. And when once you perceive this, you will henceforward grow every day to a fuller understanding of it, until you come at last to love the whole world with a love that will then be all-embracing and universal." In the same spirit, author Len Sweet makes the appeal to us to pay attention to the little things, to see life for what it really is, a succession of astonishments. And for those of us who look at how profoundly screwed up the world is, and who get frustrated with how insignificant our best efforts seem at changing anything for the better, I have a reminder from Dr. Emily Towns, one of our Living the Questions contributors and recently minted Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of Religion and Black Studies at Boston University. Of paying attention to and valuing even the smallest efforts at seeing the real right in front of us, she says, "I'm talking about what we call in Christian ethics the everydayness of moral acts. It's what we do every day that shapes us and says more about us than those grand moments of righteous indignation and action." What kind of everyday moral acts? My friend Rex Hunt offers a convenient list of everyday acts that, if practiced with attentiveness, can be elevated in our otherwise callous, fragmented world from the mundane to something approaching the sacramental? How about the everydayness of listening closely when folks talk or don't talk, to hear what both the words and the silence are saying? Or the everydayness of speaking to folks and actually meaning whatever it is that's coming out of our mouths? Or the everydayness of being a genuine presence in people's lives? The everydayness of focused reading or writing or thinking? The everydayness of sharing a meal? The everydayness of facing heartache and disappointment? The everydayness of joy and laughter? The everydayness of interacting with grace with people who expect things from us, reasonable or otherwise? The everydayness of blending head and heart? The everydayness of taking some time, however short or long, to refresh oneself through prayer or meditation? The everydayness of getting up each morning and trying one more time to get our living right? It is in this everydayness that who we really are is formed. Boundaries and differences are irrelevant. And in the everydayness of what Jesus advocated, we're charged with forgiving others, showing unconditional love, accepting others for who they are, and taking into consideration how their life's experience is different than ours, and even loving our enemies. You know what that all takes? If you answered paying attention to what is real, then all right, all right, all right. Just remember, what you get is what you see. We have opportunities every day to pay attention, to practice this ethic of everydayness, from entering empathetically into the experience of those suffering from famine and disease in other countries, to the immigrant families caught up in and torn apart by our own government's cruel policies, to our next-door neighbor who is alone and not convinced that anyone actually knows she's there anymore. The poet and doctor William Carlos Williams used to carry a notepad around with him in which he listed things I noticed today that I've missed until today. Maybe we could include people I noticed today that I've missed until today. The world is full of a healing, focusing, and values readjusting wonder, full of truly amazing, gifted, generous human beings, if only we pay attention. One evening, a family went out to dinner. Menus were passed to all, including Molly, the 8-year-old daughter. The conversation was an adult one, so Molly sat ignored. When the server took orders, he came to Molly last. "And what would you like to order?" he asked. "A hot dog and a soda," she said. "No," said her grandmother. "She'll have the roast chicken dinner, carrots, and mashed potatoes." "And milk to drink," chimed in her father. As the server turned to walk away, he asked Molly, "Would you like ketchup or mustard on your hot dog?" taking the parents aback. "Ketchup," she called out. Molly then turned to her family and added, "You know what? He thinks I'm real." Friends, the spiritual life is, at its root, a matter of seeing. Seeing one another, letting the reality of the world's pain and suffering prompt us into action. And letting the wonder and appreciation of all of creation inspire us. So pay attention. Strive to see what's real, to know the presence of the more in one another, in all of creation, and in the everydayness of this, your one wild and precious life. Be well. Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.